Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Another edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Well, Stand Your Ground is a hot debate across the country right now. Many are asking that law be repealed altogether. For those not familiar with Stand Your Ground or the term Stand Your Ground, it may be called the Castle Doctrine, Make My Day, or Defense of Habitation Law, depending upon where you live. But in South Carolina, when Charlie Condon was Attorney General, he released a statement that said, I am today declaring open season on home invaders. That season is year-round. Citizens protecting their homes who use force, even deadly force, will be fully safeguarded under the law of this state and subject to no arrest, charge, or prosecution. Was that and is that a dangerous message to send out all the way around? Wouldn't that statement allow someone to invite you to their home, start an altercation, murder you, and then you stand your ground as their defense? Well, I think so. So tonight, that's what we're talking about. The atmosphere of the stand your ground law, period, does it create an atmosphere for someone who has ill intent to commit murder and get off with it? Well, Charlie Condon is no longer the Attorney General in South Carolina, by the way, but that type of defense is often used that down that way. And from what I understand, no one ever is prosecuted in most cases. I shouldn't say ever, but in most cases, no one is ever prosecuted in South Carolina since Charlie Condon made that statement, even though he's no longer in office. So that's what we're talking about tonight, y'all. Stand Your Ground declares open season on black males. That's what we're talking about. Stand Your Ground declares open season on black males. But I got a very intelligent panel tonight, so I'm very excited about what they're going to bring to this discussion. But before we begin, we want to remind you that the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Tonight we have, I see one guest, if they're on the phone, I do not recognize their number, but we have two attorneys and a civil rights activist with us tonight. And so hopefully they're going to be able to clear up any questions about Stand Your Ground defense. They're going to be able to explain to us when we're in the law or within the law and when we're outside of the law where Stand Your Ground defense is going to be applied. First of all, we have Mr. Kevin McBride. He's with McBride Law PC out in California. We also have Carl Mitchell with us tonight, and we're going to open up Mr. McBride and Carl Mitchell's phone. Good evening, guys. How are you?
Hi, Kerry. Fine.
Kevin. Fine. Hi. That was Kevin, right?
Yes. Yeah, Kevin McBride. And I'm calling from home. It's a 424 area code, so that might be what's throwing you off, but that's me.
Okay, I see. Okay, I see your number. And Carl Mitchell, good evening.
Good evening, Kerry. How are you this evening?
I'm good. I'm good. And my third guest, I don't recognize that number if that is them, and I do apologize, but that's not the number that I was given. If it is. But anyway, you guys, you know, Stand Your Ground is a very hot debate, very, very hot debate right now since George Zimmerman went on trial for the murder of Trayvon Martin. That said, my title tonight was Stand Your Ground declares open season on black males. We'll start with you, Mr. McBride. Do you feel like that title is a fair title or is that a little strong?
I think the title is strong. I think you did not properly articulate what Stand Your Ground law is, though, in your introduction. And
but
either now or at some point, I would like to try to clear that up, if I may.
No, start now. Please clear that up.
Okay.
How did I not define
castle
it correctly?
Laws. So let's start with castle laws. That is the right to protect the interior of your home, not the porch, but the interior. And that law gives the homeowner a presumption that if someone breaks into their home by force, not by invitation, mind you, but by force, if someone breaks into your home, they're there for no good purpose, and they are presumed to intend you deadly bodily harm. That's a castle law. So in your example, for example, if you invite someone to your house and you get mad at them and want to shoot them, you're not protected by law to do that. So that's home defense law.
But if I was going to use that for my defense, I wouldn't tell them that I invited them there and I started the altercation. I would just start from, Zimmerman did, from the middle of the story.
Cops have a pretty good way of ferreting that out. But let me just kind of continue on what I understand Stand Your Ground law to be. Stand Your Ground law means that when you're in a public setting, not your home, when you're in a public setting, if you are faced with the risk of death or grave bodily harm, you likewise do not have to retreat if it's not reasonable to do so, and that's in a public setting as opposed to inside of your house. So that's, you know, that clarification might be useful. Like, Carl, if you agree with that or not, might I yield to you.
Okay.
But they call that detached reflection cannot be demanded in the presence of an uplifted knife. And so a person does not have to think about the consequences of the crime, especially in Texas now, according to the 2007 amendment, Texas legislation. They have to think about the crime that they're about to commit or the civil penalties that may come behind it because of being acquitted by a jury like George Zimmerman was. The family of the deceased can't sue that individual. But that detached reflectment cannot be demanded in the presence of uplifted knife. Basically, what I'm getting from that here in Texas is that if you have altercation with a person and they're threatening your life or bodily injury or whatnot, even if they're in your motor home or you're in a car or something like that, you have a right to kill them. Well, I'm kind of agreeing with Kerry with this. Does stand the ground declared open season on black male because they're basically giving the whites, you know, the authority to shoot first and ask questions later, and then they use this castle doctrine has been extended now to say something about the curtailage of the habitation, whereas that now they can kill you for being in the yard. You know, they can say that
that's just not right. I'm sorry. You can't shoot someone for being in the yard. I mean, that's just not the law. So, I'm sorry.
You know what? I'm going to disagree with you for 1 second on a situation that happened in some part of South Carolina, and I don't even remember.
Okay.
Mark Howard was a young man. He was a homeless man in South Carolina, and he wandered onto the property of someone one night, and they believed that his intent was to break into their truck. The person never entered the habitation. They were just found outside the truck. There was never any fingerprints found in the truck. There was never any fingerprints found inside the truck. However, the homeowner said that once they popped their garage door, what happened was that Mr. Howard, they said, pointed something at them that they thought was a gun, and they killed him. And actually, they killed him outside of the property. And actually, he died across the street. And many believe that actually he was shot across the street. But that person never faced any criminal charges.
Well, that might have been it might have been investigated properly or improperly or handled poorly. That's entirely possible, Carrie.
And somebody questioned why I talked about South Carolina. But I talked about South Carolina because the atmosphere there, once Charlie Condon put that information out there, it just gave people they just turned it into the Wild Wild West. And they just, you know, anytime anybody, you know, infringes upon any of my property or my person or whatever, just immediately just shoot is the atmosphere down there. And I just think that.
If I may comment, I think you're right about that.
Okay.
So that I agree with. Now, I don't think that's what the law says, but I do think people do think that and really don't understand what their legal rights are and misapply them. And I think you see that all the time and way too often. So I totally agree with that, Carrie.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Zimmerman. Let me go to this 843 number because I'm not sure if this is one of my guests, but they have their hands raised, and I am waiting on another panelist. 843-276, good evening. You're on Center Stage. 843-276. Good evening. Okay. Obviously. Okay. 843. If you would take your hand down, that means just press 1 again, and that would remove you from appearing to want to speak with the host. But speaking again about the George Zimmerman trial. George Zimmerman had originally said that he wanted to use Stand Your Ground as his defense, and at the last minute, he changed his mind, and they went with just self-defense. Mr. McBride, do you have any idea why they changed his defense?
Well, in my opinion, I don't think Sandy Ground had much of anything to do with Zimmerman's defense, and that's why I think they probably realized that. I just don't see it being totally relevant to his case, even though I realize it's in the news a lot. I get that, Carrie. But, you know, George Zimmerman shot Trayvon Martin tragically because he believed his life was in danger, and the jury believed that. And that's what that case was, as I see it.
Okay, well then, this is a problem that I had with George Zimmerman's story. You know, he was originally just watching him, and then it became a point in which he says, okay, I need to call the police because this person is really suspicious. And then, you know, once he told the dispatcher, you know, what was going on, and the dispatcher, and he gave the dispatcher a description, and they said that an officer was en route. When he left the vehicle, didn't that turn it into a situation in which, like they say, he turned from being just the watchman to the aggressor in that situation, and so therefore his defense really was no defense?
That's a good argument. That's a good argument. You know, I'm talking as a lawyer here. And would you like me to continue, or do you want to pass
the
time?
Yes, I mean, answer that one if you would, Mr. McGrath.
Okay, sure. What I think, if we really to focus on what George Zimmerman did wrong, in my opinion, it's right what you are talking about, Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, in my opinion, that if you have armed citizens, that they have a responsibility to be very, very careful with their weapons. And if they see something awry, they must call a 911 dispatcher, in my opinion. And and they should and must follow a 911 dispatcher instructions, in my opinion. And failure to do so is a problem. And that, to me, is the wrinkle in the Zimmerman case. Now, had the prosecutors backed off and tried to push a manslaughter claim and taken that theory that Zimmerman basically didn't, you know, disregarded the 911 operator, I think they may have gotten a conviction. But because the prosecutors pushed for murder, that's just was too much to swallow. So, you know, that's just one person's opinion. But I'm more or less agreeing with you, Carrie, on the 911 call and that issue.
I'm realizing why they didn't go for the standing ground, because, you know, Florida law is basically like Texas now. After Texas changed its law, amended it in 2007, section Texas law, section 9.31, 902 and 3, say, Jim couldn't claim that it said somebody did not provoke the person against whom the force was used. Okay. Trayvon Martin did not provoke that. Okay. He did. And they also say in 3 that was not otherwise engaged in criminal activity. Trayvon was not engaged in criminal activity. And so they couldn't go with that standing ground. They had to try to go with something else.
Yes. So that's why you feel that they didn't go within your ground, because he basically all those things that you just described, he did not have that in his favor.
That's correct. He actually did the provoking. They said, and he could not be the person who did not. He had to be in a position where he did not provoke the person against whom the force was used.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you know, and another thing I'm trying to understand about stand your ground, when you have a weapon. Legally, and I read something about it. I want to get my notes on that. There was something about the way that you have to carry that weapon. You can't just carry that weapon. You got to legally carry that weapon in order for you to use the stand your ground defense. And so can you elaborate on that, Mr. McBride, what they meant by, or what that means by that? I'm looking for my notes. Something about you cannot just – go ahead.
Well, I can only speak to California law and a few of the things I've read in other states, but in California, even though it's a misdemeanor to carry an unlawful concealed weapon, it's against the law. Nevertheless, if you're faced with a deadly threat, even though it's a misdemeanor, you can still use your concealed weapon to defend yourself. So that's the way that works in California, oddly. It may sound odd, but true.
Okay.
Now, if you're a convicted felon, however, and you're carrying a concealed weapon, that's a felony. And if you use a weapon to defend yourself, then you do not have the right to self-defense. So in California, the line is drawn between misdemeanors and felonies. And so the way in which you carry a particular weapon, I can't really speak any more to that, Carrie. Maybe you can articulate it in a different way. But that's my
I think what I found in my notes here is this is there are some restrictions about carrying a gun, such as when in public. A firearm must be carried in a legal manner, whether concealed or openly.
And therefore?
So therefore, that's all they put. So that I'm assuming then you just must be a responsible gun owner in the way you carry it. I'm assuming? Is that where we're going with that?
Yeah. I guess that's probably.
Because I'm trying to understand, George Zimmerman said that he carried his gun everywhere he went except for work. Well, as a neighborhood watch person, actually you're not even supposed to have a gun. So technically he wasn't on duty, and he wasn't even supposed to have, I shouldn't say he was a volunteer neighborhood watchman, so I guess you're on duty whenever you see something, but, you know, I'm assuming. But that said, he wasn't even supposed to have the gun while doing that particular task. So it just seems like all the way around, I just don't know where the breakdown with that particular case happened. But I just don't understand, after watching that trial like a soap opera, how the prosecution lost that case. And Mr. McGrath, can you answer me that? How did they lose the case? Where was the breakdown at? You know, where did everything go wrong for the prosecution?
Happy to say that, because I knew there would not be a murder conviction from a year ago. So it's because there's no intent. The prosecution could not show intent that George Zimmerman intended to shoot Trayvon Martin. And the reason is, George Zimmerman, for better or worse, is the only alive person able to explain what happened that night. And so people may hate to hear it, but the fact is his testimony was all the jury had to go with, and therefore the prosecution really could not put on any evidence that demonstrated the intent to murder. Now, I think there was recklessness by Zimmerman, and I think it had to do with the 911 call, and, you know, I also think after calling the dispatcher, George Zimmerman should have stood away. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe
the
prosecutor overreached and tried to prove murder instead of manslaughter. That's my opinion.
It just
wasn't intent.
You know, he still shouldn't have been found not guilty on self-defense, because he still would have not been up on that rule, according to Holmes, because he still would have not been able to provoke the altercation against whom the force was used. He provoked it. He got out the car. He approached Trayvon when he was told not to get out the car. You know, we don't know what happened out there. We just know that Trayvon had some Skittles and a soda water, and Trayvon was not engaged in any type of criminal activity. You know, he wasn't committing aggravated kidnapping, murder, sexual assault, or anything. You know, no robbery or anything. So, except the fish should have been thrown out.
Sure, Carl, but wouldn't you characterize George Zimmerman's conduct about not following the 911 operator more as recklessness, more so than he was out trying to intentionally, you know, look for a person to kill? Would you agree with that?
No, I'm not going to say he's not looking for anyone to kill, but when he's racial profiling, I think that by him racial profiling, whatever Trayvon Martin's actions were against him normally should have been justified under law. Because Zimmerman's protection went out the window because the law talks about this suspicious thing, this racial profiling. If you racial profile someone, even if they have drugs on them or whatever, their choice is thrown out because of the fact that you violated the law by racial profiling. You know, just like, you know, you got them, but you actually have to throw it out because it was improperly obtained. Illegally obtained evidence is inadmissible in the court of law.
But see, you know, when you say you don't think Zimmerman went out to intentionally kill anybody, there was a 2-minute window between the time that he made contact with Trayvon Martin and the time that bullet was fired. So that said, with him having the knowledge that the police were en route, it was just strange that he didn't say to the guy, I'm neighborhood watch and the police are on the way, and if you would, you just stand here with me until the police come. I mean, that was just too simple to do. He was the adult in the situation. Trayvon Martin was the child. And I think, you know, that alone speaks volumes for what happened that night. And anything that George Zimmerman says is suspect because, you know, like I said, it was just a 2-minute window. And he knew that the police were in route. Trayvon Martin didn't know the police were in route, but George Zimmerman did.
That's correct. And he wanted to play police super cop before they got there. And so he provoked the altercation. And so, like I said, the prosecutors really didn't do their job in prosecuting this case. Even, you know, like the attorney McBride said, you know, from the very beginning, he probably could see that he wasn't going to be Zimmerman, was not going to be convicted, because one thing, you know, to my assumption, when they failed to even arrest Zimmerman from the beginning in Florida, and they already were saying he was innocent, basically, and so just putting on this mockery of a trial, so, well, you know, we just go through this process to keep the blacks or the nation happy for our criminal process, but we won't convict him. We won't even try to get a conviction. We'll give a lame duck a trial.
And, you know, speaking of the trial, since Mr. McBride, you do this for a living, that starting with the jury, did that seem odd that they would pick an all-female white jury for this trial? I mean, do you really consider that a jury of his peers?
I don't know. I mean, it certainly seems odd. Yes. I don't know. Maybe you do, Carrie or Carl, what the racial mix is in that county. Do you... either of you know? I do not know.
I do not, but I know it's got to be a black and a male somewhere in that county. I'm just saying.
Sure,
and it just,
I think so. I will say conversely, in Los Angeles, we had the reverse happen in way back when in the O.J. Simpson trial. The trial was moved to Los Angeles City and had an all-black jury. And I don't know. I don't want to make too much of that, but jury selection is just a mystery. I mean, it's I don't know. I wish I could tell you more, but I'm not sure any lawyer really understands how, you know, there's just so much luck of the draw that goes on. And I guess it's possible. It's possible that there was some, you know, fix or rig. And I don't mean to imply there was, but those things are always possible. But okay. But jury selection is just a hard thing. It's a luck of the draw thing. It's strange.
Because, let's just ask you, because you can answer this. When you're picking the jury, I mean, doesn't the prosecution and the defense have a say in the juror that's being picked?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, you don't actually pick a jury. You disqualify them. So what happens is when a jury is selected, the judge will call jurors up just randomly to sit in particular seats, and there'll be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and so on. And you would essentially start with the assumption that the first six will be your jury unless they are disqualified for some reason. So that's why there's such a randomness in the jury process, is the first six will be your jury unless somebody is disqualified. And so it's a disqualification process more than a selection process.
But then that speaks volumes to what you did. That speaks volumes to the process then, because the prosecution had every right to say, well, we don't want that one, and they had the right to keep going until they felt like they had a fair jury. Is that not correct?
They had, I don't know what they had in Florida. They probably had three peremptory challenges or four. They could go for a while. It can't go endlessly, but yes, you can disqualify for a while. Yeah.
Okay.
How many did the prosecution disqualify? Do you know? Do you remember?
That's a good question. I do not know. I do not know. But I know not enough, obviously. They did not.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, say what, Carl?
So in Florida, they only pick a six-man jury instead of a 12, right?
Right. I think unless it's a capital murder, then you have 12. So knowing that you're down to six people, it just seemed very strange to me that the prosecution would have ever agreed to an all-female jury and no blacks and no males on the jury. That's just crazy. That's just crazy.
It is.
That's right.
Sure.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. Let's get back to the subject. I'll stand your ground. Now, this is one thing I want to put out there, because, you know, we're trying to cover this and we're trying to make it clear so everybody understands what stand your ground is once we leave this show tonight. But one thing I do interpret from the stand your ground is this whole issue with whether or not you retreat or not. Would you all say that it is safe to say the smartest thing to do, if at all possible, is to run if an altercation looks like it's about to turn deadly?
Of course, but they've done a rebook that where you don't have to retreat. That's where that's what messed up. You don't have to retreat anymore. And so that's what basically gave you the on season, you know, to shoot first. If they still had that retreat in there, you must try to retreat first instead of, you know, you know, go ahead and assault a person with a deadly weapon, then Zimmerman probably would have thought about that more. About, I'm sure Zimmerman knows the law, and he knew he'd get away with shooting Trayvon. And most people do know the law. We just don't know the law. Our people just don't know the law. And so that's why we keep losing the fight out here.
But I guess my point is, though, you know, you got a choice in this thing. If the altercation turns deadly, you may end up being carried by six, or you may end up being tried by 12. So the third option would be to run and avoid the situation altogether. So doesn't it seem like if it really, when this whole retreat issue becomes part of the argument, that really sometimes it's better to just run if that option is available?
If you can safely do so, oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's the one thing about this stand your ground nobody's really talking about. If there's that third option where you do have a door or window or something that you can go out of, the better thing would be to do that and get the law involved rather than to do this whole stand your ground thing to begin with, because, you know, there is, you know, going to be, you know, every action causes a reaction. So you have to be careful when you're hot-headed. And I think a lot of stand your ground issues are about people, you know, nobody's willing to back down. And I think really, you agree with that, Mr. McBride?
I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah.
I wholeheartedly agree. And I believe that if you elect to carry a gun, or if you are a policeman and you carry a gun by law, you kind of gave up the right to be a hothead at that point.
Ooh.
I mean, you gave it up, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Now, being hotheaded is never good, but if you have a gun, you don't get to be a hothead.
I agree with that. And I think when you carry a gun every day, like Zimmerman said he did, I don't know what that really says about you, because, you know, I know we live in a bad world right now, but I don't really think I need a gun everywhere I go. I don't think I need to carry a gun to Target, as he was about to do that night, you know, if he was really ever en route to Target. I don't think you need a gun to go to Target.
Yeah, I'm not going to criticize your opinion or his. I don't know. Everyone decides that for themselves. But what I do absolutely insist is, if you are carrying a gun, you have to be the responsible person. You do not have the option to be a hothead, and you better be squared away and trained and understand how to think through problems. And if you can't do that, you should not carry a gun. That's my opinion.
I agree. And I think everybody carrying a gun needs to have weapons training. You know, I don't think that you should irresponsibly carry a gun and say, you know, just because you can afford one and they gave you a license to carry one, that it's okay to not be, you know, trained. I think it's a certain responsibility that goes with getting that firearm, and I think training is part of it. That's just
and that's what I preach. I train quite a bit. I train people quite a lot, and that's what I always tell people, is the Second Amendment is part of our American culture, and it's part of who we are, but it carries the obligation and the responsibility to be extremely responsible. It does. And I think, you know, a lot of people forget that. And Carrie, you kind of touched upon it in your talks about, you know, what happens in South Carolina, or certain, you know, gun owners, you know, stick out their chest and strut around. I just think it's wrong.
Yeah.
It's wrong.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, how do you all feel that this whole stand your ground debate is going to play into the gun debate that was already on the table before the stand your ground debate came up? How do you think, is it going to work against it, or is it going to work for it? Carl.
What do you think, Carl?
You think the stand your ground debate is going to work what now, Carrie?
You know, the president was pushing a gun bill before this whole thing happened. And so now, how do you think this whole stand your ground? Because to me, now this is what I'm thinking. Stand your ground is going to make everybody want to go get a gun. Because, you know, everybody's thinking now, well, you know, if somebody can shoot me, then I need to have my weapon so I can shoot back. So you got all these people thinking about guns, and here the president was talking about a gun bill. So do you think it's going to help or hurt his chances of getting the gun bill passed?
I don't think I'm going to get the gun bill passed, because whites are saying this year, if we let you institute a law to where we're going to have, you know, what type of background check, you know, they were talking about, you know, that they don't want the universal background check as well. You know, if they do that, then a lot of whites, some of them won't be able to get the guns. So, you know, they are the armed race. And so what the right is saying is that they use this thing about the criminals don't care about the law, that the criminals don't have the assault weapons anyway, like they in the military. And so by outlawing our assault weapons, they're saying, the right, then these criminals who don't care about the law, if there's a racial war, it's really in the back of their mind starts, then they're going to get, you know, wiped out or beat anyway. So they're not going to go for no gun regulation. They're not going for it. The vice is not going for that.
You agree with that, Mr. McBride?
Yeah, I think he's correct. I think he's correct, and I share that view. I don't favor gun regulation. I mean, honestly, I believe Carl's reading the cards correctly. Now, here I live in California. It's very different here.
But, really? What is the atmosphere in California as far as guns are concerned?
Very good question. The atmosphere. Politicians really have strict gun control. I mean, it's very strict. You probably know that, right?
Yes.
Or not?
Oh, we knew
so,
that.
So we probably have, after New York and Massachusetts, the strictest gun control laws in the country. So what's the atmosphere? It kind of depends on where you are. And, boy... there are a lot of gun owners and a lot of gun problems. I don't know. I'm not sure I can answer that question very intelligently without rambling. So maybe you want to ask something else or come with
the
problem. Even Harry Reid, you know, the majority, you know, leader right there, they're going to bomb a team to the teeth and nail. You know, he dropped the ball. They tried to do the filibustering, you know, trying to kill his filibuster thing when it came to the gun laws and whatnot. Well, you know, he dropped the ball for everybody, and everybody was mad at him. Now he's back on the wagon with this other thing about the filibustering for the appointees. He said he'll do a filibustering change if these people didn't approve Obama's appointees. But for the gun thing, none of the whites are too much on the wagon with that. Some of them are, but majority of them, they're not going to try to go for no gun measures because, like I say, they want to classify the blacks as the criminals and the drug dealers and the pushers, and they figure that the drug dealers and pushers are going to have automatic assault weapons regardless of the law. And so if there's a racial war kick off, then they're going to get outnumbered in weapon every measures and whatnot. So,
I think you're reading it quite correctly, Carl. I think that's how... white people largely think, yeah.
So do you think he's correct when he say that we're heading toward a race war?
Oh, a race war? No, I don't think that. No, uh-huh. I don't think we're heading toward a race war, and I'm somewhat qualified to talk to that point, I believe, even though I'm white, but I do a lot of public service in South Central Los Angeles, and right literally two blocks away from the point where the Rodney King riots broke out. So I see a lot of race issues, and I'm there on Friday nights, you know, late. And where I go, there's a street in Los Angeles called Florence Avenue, and across this one side of the street is pretty much all black African American. On the other side of the street is pretty much all Mexican. And oh my goodness, you really see it. But do I think there's going to be a race war between whites and blacks? I do not. I think that day is past. I really don't think I don't see that happening personally, Carl.
No, I don't think there's going to be a race war. Maybe I misinterpreted. I didn't know. I didn't mean that there's going to be a race war. In the back of whites' mind, though, if there is a race war, then by them instituting these gun control laws, outlawing these assault weapons and whatnot, then their guns are going to be restricted for that artillery. But they're saying that the criminals, who they want to claim blacks, mostly Hispanic, well, now, are going to have those weapons. And so that if there is a race war or seemingly a race war, then the whites are going to be in a disposition, and they don't ever want to put themselves in a disposition.
Well, and if you can take the word race war out of that, I think there are a lot of people who have guns in South Central. A lot. I mean, a lot. And,
Of course,
I'm not sure how to answer. Carrie, why don't you jump in? What do you
Well, I'll say this. You know, you say you're literally two blocks from where the Rodney King situation happened. The other day we saw on the news, if we were actually getting real footage, that there was like large crowds in Los Angeles again, you know, protesting this verdict. So what was the atmosphere in L.A. the other day when those large groups of people got together and were in the streets protesting?
You know, LAPD was very concerned, and I have, you know, some contacts with LAPD and follow, you know, them closely. They had a citywide tactical alert, so they were concerned. That's a big – to have a citywide tactical alert is a very big deal. It doesn't happen often. Now, it turned out that the – you know, as you may know, LAPD puts down uprisings rather quickly and swiftly, and that's a topic for an entirely different discussion. But, they were worried.
They got it under control pretty quickly.
They did, yeah, luckily without anyone, you know, being injured. But, yeah, they put it under control really quickly.
We're going to go back to 843. 843, you took your hand down. Now you have it back up. Good evening. You're on center stage. 843-276.
Hey, stranger, this is T. Smitty. I'm at work. Just had to chime in. Good show so far.
Hi, T. Smitty. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. You know, I live in the wild, wild west known as Phoenix, Arizona. But, all right.
That'd
you know, great. I'm not a lawyer. I just watch Law and Order. Okay, so,
right.
I'm not, you know, but... You know, first things first about this case. The case stunk from the very beginning when they didn't even try to charge George Zimmerman for 40-something days. And that right there, you knew it was stunk because he asked the same prosecution who didn't want to charge the man to now want to put him away in prison. Come on. You know, that's just how I look at it. Other problem is that this whole stand your ground law, I'm just looking at it. I'm not a legal expert. I'm just a regular guy. To me, it seems like to really get off on that law, you have to kill somebody. And it seems like now, hey, I killed somebody? Oh, yeah, now since I remember Yosemite Sam said in the Bugs Bunny cartoons back in the day, dead men tell no tales. So guess who's the only one that get to tell the story? Someone like Zimmerman. No one saw it. No one else saw the things from start to finish. There was no video. So guess who had to tell the story? Him. And plus, when people talk about the law, now, of course, I'm a black guy. I look at it like this. Laws are written, but let's be honest. There's a white side and a black side when it comes to laws. Let's just be honest here. Because out here in Arizona, you can walk with a gun you holster legally. White guy can walk in a gun and holster to the 7-Eleven. Now, let my black behind walk in that same 7-Eleven gun in my holster. After I get my Slurpee, the SWAT team will have red dots on my head. Let's just be honest here.
Yeah.
And my last thing is, the thing about this law is, look at how they protected him. They talk about old race. Race was a part of it because they love these people that will bring up black-on-black crime. Yeah, but someone please tell me, when was the last time a black man admitted to killing a gunner, another unarmed black man down and was able to walk the street free for 45 days and no one charged him? There was no APB out there. But just be honest here, and that's just how I look at the way this leaked justice system works. There's a system for them. There's a system for them. Let's be honest. They're in Florida. A lot of black people live in Florida. You mean to tell me you couldn't find a black woman, a black man to be on that jury, or even on the prosecution? Come on. And I just stunk from the beginning. And I'll say this real quick. The prosecution stunk. I don't think they even cared. They didn't want to win that case because all they didn't want to win that case. It's obvious. That's just my opinion. If I'm a guy who just watched Law and Order, you know.
So you don't believe? I mean, you know, and I had a hard time. I must admit, the prosecution just looked like they were sluggish, you know, throughout the trial. And then it looked like in closing arguments, they said, "Okay, we better get up and do something." I mean, that's just really how I looked at this trial. And it looked like the defense was just—I mean, every time they got up, they were just knocking them down. And I could myself understand why the prosecution didn't put on a better case. Mr. McBride, can you tell us why the prosecution didn't put on a better case?
They didn't have evidence for murder, in my opinion. They had a losing case. Had they been more realistic, had they said, we're going to go for manslaughter, we're going to convict this guy of manslaughter, we're going to put him in jail. Manslaughter is what we're going after. And the reason is because he didn't properly communicate on the 911 call. He didn't follow instructions. If he's going to carry a gun, he's got to follow instructions of the operators and be much more cooperative than he was. And that was reckless, and that's manslaughter. I could convict that case.
Really?
But when you overreach, then everything falls apart.
Well, let me ask you this, because, and I'm not a lawyer either, y'all, but this is one of the things that I'm sitting back Monday morning quarterbacking as I'm watching this trial, and I'm going, well, why didn't somebody take George Zimmerman's toxicology report that night, seeing that he was the one that shot the gun? And I thought, okay, that's strange. And then I looked at, you know, George Zimmerman's criminal history, and I thought, okay, now that's something that they ought to make sure that they put in there too. And then I thought about the 5 non-emergency calls that George Zimmerman had made to police about suspicious black males. That sounds like racially profiling. So, you know, when they start saying that they couldn't use terms like racially profiling when that's exactly what George Zimmerman did, what do you mean you can't use it?
Exactly. The judge was wrong about not allowing them to discuss a racial profile when George Zimmerman clearly fitted the definition of racial profile up on Trayvon Martin. So I don't see how they excuse
that. And Mr. McBride, maybe you can explain to us why that term was not allowed to be used. I think they could use the term profiling, but they would not allow them to use the word racially profiling.
I can't explain it. I don't understand that logic, Carrie.
Really? Because, you know, we were stuck with that one. We were like, okay, if that's what he did, and if they had entered the non-emergency calls, all 5 of them, which I played on my show, y'all, the first show that we did on George Zimmerman, titled Does the Evidence Prove Trayvon Martin Was Murdered, we played those 5 non-emergency calls back to back to back, and they clearly start off the same every time. You know, I'm the neighborhood watch guy, and, you know, where I live, they've been broken into, and there's a guy over here, and he's black, and he looks suspicious. Every single one of them, back to back to back, that's how they started out. And so it's just a lot of questions on, you know, that prosecution and how they handled that case with George Zimmerman. And, you know, time will tell. You know, in the end, you know, somebody says something about, you know, jurors, I think B-37 is in trouble for giving that interview and some of the things that she said. So, you know, all of this is like stuff they're coming up with after the fact, you know, showing George Zimmerman's MySpace page where, you know, he clearly made racist remarks against Mexican people on MySpace. Well, some folks are saying he's Mexican, but if you looked at that MySpace page that somehow mysteriously popped up, you know, right after he got convicted, I don't think he's Mexican, not by the remarks that he made. And so, you know, it's just so many things that are just questionable. So, you know, I don't know. T-Smitty, you got any other questions?
Oh, I just want to say it's a great conversation. And you were right about how come they brought up Trayvon's Facebook page and all that. And that's what stuck about me. It became Trayvon Martin had to prove himself. It's like he was on trial. And that just stuck with me because, you know, he got, if I remember correctly, wasn't he found guilty of aggravated assault, even though he was dead, you know?
Oh, yeah, technically. I mean, well, I thought he was found guilty of his own murder. That's what I thought. In the end, I mean, I thought that if he hadn't done everything that he did wrong, he would still be here today. So I think that, isn't that what the defense ended up saying that, you know, to his mother that, you know, wouldn't you like that to be Trayvon Martin's voice or something like that? But, you know, because he really some kind of way caused his own death or some stupid comment like that, you know. So, you know, that, you know, when people are wondering why people are getting up in large numbers and protesting about Stand Your Ground, it's because it's got the rest of us scared to death because we're looking at the fact that someone like a George Zimmerman could be walking around with a gun, unbeknownst to us, and have ill intent and just start an altercation and then end up with, you know, us being killed. And he knows the law. Now everybody knows the law, you know, because they learned it on that trial, and they may get off with murder. That's scary stuff. I mean, I'm sorry, that's just scary stuff. So if y'all are wondering why people are marching in the streets, they're marching in the streets because they're scared.
Yeah.
Would y'all agree with that?
I'm about to go, but thanks for taking my call. And I love this conversation, and I do agree. This law is bad because it I don't like subjective laws. That's just me. But you guys have a great one, and I'll listen to the rest of the archives. I got to get back to work.
Thank you, Smitty. Thank you. You know, they said something about, in the research I did for this show, that in the 5 years after the law was passed, the rate of justifiable homicides in Florida tripled.
The NRA is against the passing of these gun laws and whatnot, and so we're going to have a battle with them as well in the Congress. You know, you got these, this NRA, they're told that they don't care who get killed, the kids, babies, all the people, they're not for gun regulation. That's another problem we have in America. We have NRA people who are money hungry, basically. You know, they're money hungry. Money means more than children and people's lives to them. So they're going to fight teeth and nail against this gun regulation law that Obama may be talking about in the future.
I think they said the NRA is the one that lobbied hard for the Stand Your Ground law. I mean, they're the one, we know how deep their pockets are. That, you know, in the researching for this show, I found that the NRA was one of the lobbyists that, you know, really lobbied hard for this law. And for y'all who may not know, and I found it out in researching for this show myself, that this law started in Florida. I did not know that. I don't know where I thought it started at, but it started in Florida under Jeb Bush.
Yes, it started in Florida, and Texas has picked up a lot of that law since 2007 in several other states. Matter of fact, about 40, I think it said like 40 states. But,
You're right, 40 states.
About 40 other states, I could, you know, this case law he was talking about, and Texas picked up the closest one to Florida. You know,
Say what, Mr. McBride?
I wanted to be devil's advocate in some respects. Okay. I can tell you a case in Texas and a case in Florida, both of which happened in the last 6 months. Stand Your Ground cases, both rejected, both ended up in murder convictions. So if you want to look it up, the Texas one is a guy named Raul Rodriguez. And the Florida one is a gentleman named James Wander. Can I tell you about those cases briefly? So Mr. Rodriguez is an upstanding homeowner and gun guy, and he's mad at his neighbors for playing the music too loud. Well, he goes over and complains, and his neighbors come out and yell at him, and they have a shout fest in the middle of the street, and Mr. Rodriguez says, oh, you know, I'm afraid of my life, you know, I'm gonna shoot, and he ultimately did. He shot and killed his neighbor, and he tried to rely on Stand Your Ground in Texas. Well, the Houston jury rejected that and convicted him of second-degree murder, saying, hey, you don't get to just stand out in the middle of the street and say you're afraid and shoot to somebody. It's not how it works. So there's that case. That's maybe 6 months ago. There's the Wander case in Florida. An elderly gentleman on his way to dialysis has a road rage problem with another driver. It turns out the other driver is a DEA agent undercover. So those two get in a, I don't know what, road rage back and forth. They pull over, and the DEA guy charges Mr. Wander's car. He's going to teach him a lesson. Gun's holstered, but he's going to go, I don't know, yell at him. Well, Mr. Wander, the old gentleman, pulls his gun, shoots a DEA agent, and says, hey, stand in my ground. I was in fear of my life. I'm a dialysis patient. If the guy had hit my shunt, which dialysis patients apparently have to have to put in the blood circulation, it would have killed me. If he had hit me in the shunt, in my arm, it would have killed me. So, therefore, I had a right to exercise self-defense. And the judge said, no, you don't have that right. Sorry. So that was Florida. So, and I just want to finish up my thought on this topic. I think there are real racial issues, which I would love to talk about in a second longer, but the main Stand Your Ground cases in the state of California, as I quickly looked at them, actually involve black people being defended and having the right to stand their ground when they were attacked. And so I am positive that there's racial problems, and I'm more than happy to try to engage in that conversation. I'm just not sure that doing it by Stand Your Ground is the effective way to do it, because there's so many contrary examples. So that's my
Well, you know, and I have an example of my own, you know, and it's a Caucasian man in Oklahoma City. Feel free to look it up. His name was Jerome Ursland. I don't know if anybody is spelled E-R-S.
No, what happened there?
Okay, well, the problem with Ursland was he was a pharmacist and never had a problem with the law, retired military, the whole nine yards. And he was working in a pharmacy one night, and they were about to close. And they had one of those doors where you have to be rung in. And just right at closing time, two young men came to the door. They let him in, and the two guys were teenagers. One had a gun, one didn't. And the one that had the gun pointed it at Mr. Ursland and the two clerks and said it was a stick-up. Well, Oklahoma City had been having a rash of pharmacy robberies. So Mr. Ursland was armed, unbeknownst to the two young men, and he had two guns under the counter, and he was an excellent shot, no figure. And so what happened was the guy who didn't have the gun changed positions. He, you know, I don't know if it was just out of nerves, but he was standing by the door, and then all of a sudden he moves to the other side of the guy who had the gun. Well, Ursland by this time is reaching under the counter for his gun. He gets his gun, and he shoots the guy who doesn't have the gun. And he shoots him one time in the head and takes the guy down. Well, then the second guy, they had propped the door open to get out, I guess, in case, you know, things got bad. Well, anyway, the second guy runs out of the store. Ursland follows the shooter, or the one who had the gun, I guess I should say, followed him out of the store and emptied the gun. He comes back into the store. The guy who was shot is laying on the floor. He steps over him, then goes behind the counter, gets the second gun, loads it, comes back, and empties the gun into the guy who's laying on the floor.
So
well, you stand your ground
as
his
jail, man. Right? Huh?
He what?
Please tell me he went to jail.
Well, you know what? What's amazing is at first they called him a hero. I kid you not. At first they called him a hero. They hailed him a hero until the videotape from the store surfaced and the NAACP
yeah.
got involved and they realized that was overkill. The first shot was a clean shot, and if he had done nothing else, he never would have faced charges. But because he went back and shot the kid additional times, that was murder. And he's now serving life in prison.
And he should. And also when he chased the other young guy out of the building, that young man did not, even though he had a gun, did not pose a threat at that point in time because he was running away, so he was not a threat. And so shooting at that kid was also wrong. And so, yes, the pharmacist should be guilty of murder. It was murder, in my opinion. It was absolute murder.
See, he had the right to kill the guy inside the store because that followed up on what they call the alter ego doctrine, you know, where you can kill like that there if you are trying to protect persons who are not able to protect themselves in the store, whether or not if it's an employee or a family member or whatnot. That's called the alter ego doctrine. And so he would have been allowed to kill those guys. But when he come back and empty the gun on him, and then he chased the guy and loaded on him, he was in trouble then.
And, you know, and his defense was originally they shot at me because he had to say something. So he said they shot at me, and the police department tore the whole store up looking for a bullet behind the counter, and they never found one. And, you know, he starts saying, you know, I got grace across my head and, you know, all kind of crazy stuff. But anyway, you know, that divided Oklahoma City along racial lines because, you know, white people down there just couldn't see how a law-abiding citizen who was military retired and never had a criminal record could go to jail because two thugs broke into the pharmacy, you know. And so that's I'm saying what other people are saying. This is not my words, but this is.
In my opinion, speaking as a Caucasian man, I just don't see how that was controversial at all because you have a right to self-defense as long as the threat exists. When the threat stops, your right to self-defense stops. And this gentleman went clearly past the line of self-defense. And so how any, in my opinion, right-minded person in Oklahoma City would defend the pharmacist after that, I just don't see it. And frankly, the people I know wouldn't defend him. So I don't see why that's a racial problem. It shouldn't have been.
I did a show or two on it, and it was crazy because it divided Oklahoma City. I mean, right along racial lines, and you could not tell the people who were Ursuline supporters that he wasn't right, and you couldn't tell the people that were, you know, saying that he was wrong, that it was just crazy. It was just, I mean, vice versa, and it was just crazy. And so the energy in that town was so tense before they sentenced him. And people could not believe that he ended up getting life in prison, but that's exactly what happened. So, Mr. McBride, let's discuss a little bit so people do get a little better understanding of overkill versus using stand your ground as a defense.
Sure. It's really simple. If you face a threat to your life, or as Carl said, the life of someone nearby, you know, you have a right to use deadly force to stop that threat as long as the threat exists. When the threat stops, your right to shoot stops. It's that simple.
What? Oh,
so,
wow.
I mean, it's kind of common sense, right? I mean,
and,
really.
You know, it should be. But, you know, isn't there something said, and y'all have to help me here, that a lot of times when people shoot, they don't shoot just once. Like a lot of times they say cops, when they shoot, they'll end up emptying their gun because there's something psychological that happens, and they don't proceed to be gone immediately or something like that.
I can talk about that. I can talk about that because that's a very, very real issue for everybody.
Okay.
You want me to speak to that for a second? Or
yeah, sure. Go ahead.
So, yeah, anybody who's been in a life-threatening situation knows, you know, we're wired so that we fight, you know, fight or flight. You've heard that, right? Either fight or you run away. And people, it's kind of, you know, some people will fight and some will run away.
Mm-hmm.
And but the problem is you're not rationally thinking. You just have a quick response. And so when you feel like your life is in danger, and if your response is to fight, a lot of people just come out. They pretty much go blind, fire away, probably miss almost all their shots. And then, you know, when their adrenaline calms down, they look around and see what happened. And unfortunately, that's just the biology of being a human being. I mean, it just is. Now, you can train that out. And that's what happens when you know, you hear about the Navy SEALs that take down, you know, whoever, Osama bin Laden, whoever, you know. They don't have that because that has been trained out of them. They go into a takedown or whatever you know, kill, which is really what it was, and they're extremely calm all the way through it. But other people aren't. So when you have an armed citizen out on the street, you cannot expect them to have the training or the mindset or the calm of a Navy SEAL or an Army Delta operator. They're just not going to be that. They're going to be more like a dog or a cat or a snake. And that's just, you know, biology, unfortunately.
Mm. Okay. So how does that translate when you go to court and you tell the judge that you shot him however many times, it, you know, 6-7 times because your finger got stuck on the trigger? I mean, is that acceptable or is that considered overkill?
Yeah, there's no magic answer to that, Kerry. Bottom line is, when the threat ends, when you no longer face a threat, you had better stop shooting. Period.
Okay, y'all got that. Listen, when the threat is over, stop shooting. If you're going to use stand your ground as your defense, when the threat is over, whenever you perceive that you're no longer in danger, that's the point you must stop shooting.
Absolutely.
Because anything after that is considered overkill, and you're probably going to prison for a long time.
Yep.
If
you tell a judge, hey, I was just amped up and the adrenaline was flowing, that's just not going to work. It's not.
Ooh.
So, Kerry, you said it exactly right.
Wow. Okay, y'all heard it. I mean, and, you know, if you just tuned in and you're wondering, what the heck are they talking about? We're talking about the topic tonight, Stand Your Ground Declares Open Season on Black Males. That's what we're talking about. You know, in light of the George Zimmerman trial, which has opened the debate about Stand Your Ground all over the country, like I said, it's called Make My Day Law in some parts of the country. It's also called Castle Doctrine, and it's called some other type. I forgot the last title, something of a habitation. In other parts of the country. But basically the thing is, stand your ground is your defense. If you're saying someone is attacking you, you're in fear of your life, I believe, and correct me if I get this wrong, Mr. McBride, you're in fear of your life and you don't retreat, which means that you're standing your ground and you're defending yourself because you feel like your life is in danger or you're in great, you're in threat of great bodily harm, I believe is how it goes. So that's what we're talking about tonight. Did I say, did I get it wrong?
And if I can add one important qualifier. Not only must you feel like your life is in danger, but an average person standing next to you must have to see the situation the same way.
Okay, so any reasonable person in Mr. Rodriguez's
case from Texas I told you about, he's standing out in the middle of the road saying, I fear for my life, I'm standing my ground. Well, the average person wouldn't feel that way, and that's why he was not allowed to use stand your ground, because it was not a reasonable fear.
Okay.
That's correct.
Okay.
It had to be something that another reasonable person would have done in the same situation had they been, you know, in the position he was in at the time. So, a normal, like I said, a rational person would not have acted out like he did. You know, if the person had treated, then, you know, the normal person with a reasonable thinking would have stopped shooting. You know.
And I guess that's what we really want to walk away from here tonight. When you're thinking about, well, you know, I got a gun and nobody better not do anything to me because I got a gun, you know, you might really want to rethink your whole angle on that, because the whole issue is what you're doing, is it considered reasonable or not? And so if you just take the law into your own hands and your actions turn out to be not considered reasonable, that equals jail time. And so a lot of people, you know, I've heard, you know, boy, have I heard some stuff and seen some stuff on Facebook this week, you know, about what people are going to do now, and I'm going to shoot if anybody does this, and, you know, I'm going to stab somebody if they do that. That's not really smart thinking. I think really you really need to think of a stand your ground situation as last means necessary. Would y'all agree with that?
Yep.
Last means necessary. You know, don't look at it as your first option. Look at it as your last option. You know, because in my opinion, the whole stand your ground issue, it just really makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up, simply because who wants to take somebody else's life? You know, that's the whole thing I don't get. You know, this whole debate is opened up, and reasonable people don't want to take another person's life. But, you know, this whole thing makes it seem like everybody is just on, you know, this on your march and set go. If you say something to me that I don't like, you know, we're going to get in an altercation and somebody's going to get killed, and it's probably going to be you because I got a gun. That's just the wrong mood going into everything.
Well, that's why shows like this are so good, in my opinion.
Say what?
It really is a question of people being properly educated. You know,
yeah.
It is.
But you know what? Where is the education coming from? Because everybody is automatically saying repeal the law. And let's talk about that in terms of this law being appealed or not being repealed. You're trying these type cases, Mr. McBride. Is it a good law or is it a bad law?
I just think it's common sense. I don't think it's going to matter one bit of difference to people's safety. So in California, we don't formally have a stand your ground statute.
Ooh.
It's not written in the state law, but it's common law. That is to say, you'll get a jury instruction on it, on stand your ground. It's just common sense if it's applied properly. So I don't see that repealing the law is really – I don't see passing it as a big deal, or I don't see repealing it as a big deal. That's not the right question to ask, in my opinion.
Really? Well, Carl, the law, you know, there's a whole debate about repealing it. Do you think it's considered a good law on the book or a bad law? I mean, should it be repealed or shouldn't it be repealed?
I think it should be repealed because, especially in the southern states, because they are, you know, upon this black code doctrine, they still hold dear to, where, you know, where they're still trying to deny free people the right to vote. You know, they want to restrict their movement, like George Zimmer said, though, the blacks there was getting away with something, so he basically wanted to restrict their movement in that community, which is a gated community, which was a good community. Actually, I guess with Trayvon living there, his movement shouldn't have been even targeted like it there. And then they want to outlaw, you know, of black people, you know, possession of weapons and whatnot. And so I think in these southern states, that law got to go because blacks not going to be treated or protected upon that law. Because right here, you know, it talks about in the history books, talking about how blacks were subject to a much more severe penal code. And so, you know, like the lady in Florida who shot the gun in the air, you know, in the season to protect herself from a beating husband, 20 years, you know. So that,
Marissa Alexander.
Yeah, that law is not being equally applied to us It has never been equally applied to us, and it's just not happening. Nowhere in the near future, blacks are not going to be protected up under the same grounds as whites are under that law. You know,
now,
if
I,
you
may,
know,
I think you're putting your finger on the right question to ask, because repealing the law, that's one thing, but applying it equally is actually, in my opinion, the real issue.
You know, I spoke with Marissa Alexander's attorney on yesterday and asked him actually to be a part of this panel. And he declined simply because, and this is what he said exactly to me, y'all, that's the defense she's using. And so he says, listen, we don't want to go there. So he said that's exactly the defense that Marissa Alexander will be using in court. Stand your ground. She stood her ground, and that's why she fired the firearm into the air, or she fired the gun into the air. So, you know, again, like I said, good law or bad law, because that's the defense that she's using.
Okay, now she had a right to use standard ground law to self-defense, because this guy here beat her up and done all kind of bad whatnot, several times and beat up women. Okay, George Zimmer approached Mr. Martin. He approached Trayvon. He provoked the altercation. Actually, I mean, Trayvon Martin know him from a man in the moon. He wasn't wearing a police uniform. Maybe he didn't even identify himself as a community security guard or whatever. Trayvon didn't know him from anyone. So naturally, you approach a fellow like that, he might very well have a few words with you. And if Zimmer was up on this alter ego trip or ego doctrine or whatever, you know, he had and wanted to be super cop before the actual cops got there, then, you know, it's not good. It's not good. It's not going to be even applied law. He shouldn't have been allowed.
Oh, and that's another thing we want to talk about as far as the stand your ground law. Get a good understanding, y'all. Nothing beats, the Bible says, a good understanding.
Yeah.
That's it. When you're dealing with stand your ground and this whole presumption of whether or not you feel like your life is in danger or not, explain, if I'm not even physically injured yet, no one has touched me yet, but I think they're going to kill me. Explain that defense, Mr. McBride.
Sure. Can I tell you what I train people, how I train people to think through this problem? Because it kind of answers that question.
Okay.
You're a journalist, and the W questions. Every profession has the who, what, why. You know, you get at the question really quickly by asking W questions, right?
Okay.
And there is a set of W questions, I believe, for self-defense.
Ooh.
And what you want to be able to do is process those really quickly, so you can make a good decision. So the first question is, so let's take the case of the woman in her garage. What was her name, please, again?
Marissa Alexander.
Miss Alexander. I knew the case. I did not remember the name. So if I'm Miss Alexander, let's just take that for an example, if we can. You know, first question is, who's threatening me? Or who's being threatened? That's the first W question. Who's being threatened? Well, if I'm Miss Alexander, it's me. I'm being threatened. And what's the threat? What is the threat? Does my husband, does he have a gun? Does he have a knife? Is he going to beat me to death with his fist? I have to be able to articulate what's the threat. What's the threat? The third thing I have to really articulate, and this is the most important one, is why. Why do I pull the trigger? And particularly, why now? Why do I pull the trigger right now instead of waiting 5 seconds? And you have to answer that why now question to get off in self-defense. You have to be able to say, unless I shot the moment I did, I was going to get killed. Because if you can't say that, you're not going to be able to use self-defense.
I mean, well, this guy had been beating her anyway, so it wasn't the first beating. It wasn't going to be the last. And she knew that. And so she fired that shot in the air and seemed to get his attention, because she probably had never got his attention before. And he said it whooping and she put his hand all on
it. Again, Carl, so what she's going to have to show is, because one option was just to go out of the garage and call the cops or whatever she was going to, I don't know the case very well. But
I think she said the garage door was
anybody,
something and he was blocking the exit.
I have to pull a trigger right now. I can't wait. And if you can make that case and you can explain right now, why now? Why now? Well, if I don't pull the trigger now, I'm going to die. If you can explain that, you have a right to self-defense. If you can't, you don't have a right to self-defense. That's about
then let's back up. Isn't it also, I'm going to die right now, or great bodily injury Or be subjected
yes.
to a great bodily injury, possibly?
You bet. It is. Thank you, Carrie.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And that includes, you know, badly beaten or raped. Yeah.
Okay. So let me understand. You said that we need to ask ourselves the three W's. Who's being
yep.
threatened?
Yep.
What's the threat?
Yep.
And why do I pull the trigger right now?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
If you can answer those three questions, you will virtually always be on the right side of a self-defense case, in my opinion.
And so if one of the three is missing, you're probably in trouble?
Yep.
Wow. Wow. Because, see, so many people with this stand your ground, and I've seen some ridiculous comments on Facebook this week out. I mean, a lot of people are thinking, all I got to do is feel like you're threatening me so I can just therefore shoot. And I think that's what people walked away from the Zimmerman trial thinking. You know, Zimmerman's injuries don't look life-threatening, and therefore, you know, he shouldn't have killed him, but he did and he got off. So people are looking at that trial as a gauge. When actually that's not a good gauge, is it?
It's not a good gauge. It's
wow.
not.
Oh, if someone's
the reason it's
to fight
not a good
with...
gauge is, they're, you know, as Carl said, dead men tell no tales. And that's the reason Zimmerman got off, is there just wasn't no one else to say differently. So I don't think it's a good gauge at all. I think it's a bad gauge.
Wow.
I mean,
okay,
so, you know,
heard...
what happened is Zimmerman actually approaches Trayvon and a fight ensued. Apparently Zimmerman saying that Trayvon whooped him. And so upon this law... I'm sure he saw that Trayvon had a bag of Skittles in a soda water. One hand had a bag of Skittles, and the other probably had the soda water. So he'd seen that there was no immediate threat, you know, for the weaponry uses of a deadly force or anything by Trayvon. So when Trayvon whooped him, as he said, he whooped by Trayvon, then and being allowed to shoot Trayvon and get off, they're telling people, well, you know, you can provoke a fight with someone, and if they beat you up too bad, they'll whoop you because you started the fight, and you put your gun out, you can kill them and get off.
See, you know, there's so many tricky things with this one, and I hate that this stand your ground issue is surrounding this particular case, because I think a lot of people are going to go off half-cocked on what really happened and how, you know, because, you know, again, George Zimmerman did not use the stand your ground defense, even though the jury somehow use that in making or coming up with their verdict. But that was not George Zimmerman's defense. But a lot of people, you know, that are calling for this law to be repealed are looking at it like George Zimmerman got off with murder because he used stand your ground. And that's just not the case.
Right.
That's just not the case.
Right.
You know, and so when we look at it, y'all get the facts. I mean, when you get your gun, make sure that you load it with the facts first before you load it with your bullets. Make sure you load it with the facts. Because what Mr. McBride just said it's just a mouthful. You need to do the three W's before you shoot somebody. You need to know who's being threatened, what's the threat, and why do I need to pull the trigger right now? And Mr. McBride is saying if you cannot answer that, then you probably need to be figuring out how to retreat or something. So
yep.
they need to be
That's
thinking
exactly
of another
right.
option rather than shooting or pulling that trigger if they can't answer those three things.
That's exactly right. Boy, you said it exactly right.
I mean,
wow.
George Zimmerman couldn't have got off on that standing ground because the Texas law, just like the Florida law, talking about he would not have had to, it said something about not, did not provoke the person against whom the force was used. Trayvon Martin did not provoke the altercation. He did, so they knew that by him approaching Trayvon. Then it talks down here about a verbal thing, about in response to verbal provocation alone. You can't shoot Trayvon for that either, you know, and Trayvon was not otherwise engaged in criminal activity. So George Zimmerman could not use that standing ground. He had to go with self-defense and whatnot.
Okay, unless, you know, Mr. McBride, if you could, you know, again,
yep.
and I don't even remember, y'all, if we went there yet. What's the difference between self-defense and stand your ground? Why did he opt for self-defense? What does self-defense say? As opposed to stand your ground.
Self-defense is what we talked about earlier. You have a right to defend yourself if you're threatened with threat to your life or grave bodily harm. Stand your ground is just one component. It's just a wrinkle that's thrown in there. The real key is your right to use deadly force in self-defense. That's the issue. Stand your ground is just a modifier, if you will.
Gotcha. So in actuality, self-defense is the easier out anyway than stand your ground.
Well, it's actually the right way, in my opinion, the right way to think about it. Because if you answer the 3W questions, you'll either have the right to self-defense or not, and that's really what matters. I mean, if your life is truly threatened, it doesn't matter if you're standing your ground or moving sideways. I mean, you have a right to defend yourself, right?
Right.
But if your life's not being threatened, you don't.
And see, I think. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So I was going to give you one kind of a crazy example of the 3W questions that might kind of help people even understand this a little bit better. So on New Year's Eve, this last past New Year's Eve, 6 months ago, we had a LAPD officer on New Year's Eve, 11:55 p.m., almost midnight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sees a guy in South Central with an AK-47 pointed up in the air, firing away.
Oh.
And the LAPD officer freaked out, pulled his handgun, shot at the guy 11 times, missed him, luckily. And the guy ran with AK-47 around the house. And of course, the police all converged. And once they figured out what the story was, it's like, dude, it's 11:55 p.m. It's New Year's Eve. These people are from Mexico. That's what they do in Mexico. You know, so, yeah, he had AK-47. That was bad. But no one was being threatened. He was shooting in the air. No one was being threatened. And so that just kind of rolled away. Nobody got charged. And it just, you know, it was just like, okay, nothing to do here.
But had he killed the guy, where would we have been?
Oh, my gosh. It would have been, he would have lost his job. He would have been sued. It would have been a disaster for the department. It really would have been, seriously.
Or would he have said the AK-47 was being turned on him and that's why he shot?
You bring up an entirely different question, which is not, you know, one of how the law is structured. It's, you know, whether people tell the truth or not. And that's an entirely different problem. But
and I think that's the whole, yeah, I'm sorry, problem with standing your ground to begin with. If dead folks tell no tales, it's only one person left to tell the story, and so it is in their best interest to tell it in a light that makes them look like their life was being threatened. I mean, that's just kind of common sense. I mean, you know, rarely probably are you going to get somebody says, I was actually the initiator of this whole thing, and I started it, but, I got in trouble, and so here I am.
Yeah. And all we can hope is the police are good at ferreting out those kind of lies, and they usually are, and you kind of have to hope that works. But you know, that brings you to, if I may, you know, President Obama, I thought, made a very thoughtful comment today on this very issue. And, you know, I believe he's trying to open up a genuine discussion about race relations and how these things,
echo from you,
you know,
Mr. McBride.
How people interact.
Okay.
And that's, you know, that's kind of this sort of discussion. Do African Americans get proper and equal treatment or not? And that's different from should we repeal Stand Your Ground. That's a very different and much more important conversation, in my opinion.
I think the caller brought up a very good issue. I mean, a very good point about Stand Your Ground. And the truth is, you know, in most cases, if an African American had shot a white kid and came back and told the story that George Zimmerman told, I think he'd already be in prison. I really do. And I think that's how most black people feel too, that, he'd already be in prison.
Especially with him provoking the altercation, Zimmerman should have been found guilty because he put himself in that position. And once that guy was unarmed and he killed him with George, you didn't want to put yourself in that position. I mean, you made a mistake. I mean, you mistook him to be someone he wasn't. You end up shooting him, but you was told not to get out the car, so you end up putting yourself in that position. You know, you should not have done that. He should not have done that.
And I think, and the issue is, it really isn't, I mean, in most cases, you know, and it really sounds funny coming from a black person, but I really mean this. It really ain't even about black and white on this situation, y'all. It's really just about right and wrong. I mean, because if this were a white kid that a black man had done this to, I absolutely would feel the exact same way. He needs to be in prison. period. Right. And I think anybody who cares about, you know, other people, you know, I mean, it's not about black or white. It's just right and wrong. I mean, it just, you don't want people out on the street carrying guns and shooting other people for no reason at all, shooting and killing people, other people for no reason at all. We just don't want to live in that kind of world, or I know I don't. I don't know about anybody else. I'm sorry, say what, Mr.?
I don't either. We just don't
want to live in that kind of world where, you know, for no reason at all, somebody can just, you know, assume that you're doing something even though you're not, and I mean, just follow you into the darkness. I mean, it just, I don't know. I thought about this scenario over and over again in my head. If I were walking in you know, to a complex that was not very well lit, and someone started to follow me and then run behind me, you know, I don't know how I would have, you know, reacted. And if the person walked up to me and started asking me questions, you know, first of all, they didn't identify themselves. Trayvon had every reason in the world to believe that man was a predator. You know, and I think about this story just a little differently than most people. I don't believe Trayvon ever hit the guy. I really don't believe that. I believe that if this had happened as George Zimmerman said it happened, Trayvon would have had blood on him. He would have had his DNA on him. So I really do question if the story even is true that George Zimmerman told. I question if those injuries were self-inflicted. And if that's the case, that changes the whole game. You know,
I
believe that too, Carl?
I really do. I believe that's self-inflicted. I don't believe that he was beat up by Trayvon like that. I think he's inflicted those himself to make his story look better.
I really believe that too, Carl. I just don't believe, you know, there's no way that, and we're going to go back to the race card again, I just don't believe that a black man could have walked in court and said, listen, I can't tell you how he don't have no DNA on him, and I can't tell you how I don't have his DNA on me, you know, and I can't tell you why I don't have no grass stains on my clothes, you know, and I can't tell you why my head isn't beat up more than it is, you know, all these things, I can't tell you this or I can't tell you that, but at the same time, believe the fact that I had to kill him. I just don't think that a black guy could have done that. I just, and that's sad that we live in that type of country, but that's just the way it is. The laws work differently depending upon the color of your skin. That's just what it is. Hey, y'all, that's what we're talking about tonight, Stand Your Ground. Stand Your Ground declares open season on black males. If you agree with me or disagree with me, get on the phone lines. Call us up at 347-850-8390. I'd love for you to weigh in on the topic tonight. We're down to just a little bit over our last 30 minutes in the show, and I'd like to know from y'all, you know, Stand Your Ground. Do you feel like it should be repealed or not? A lot of black people are very shaky about this. I mean, and I'm included, because I'll be honest with you, I consider myself a law-abiding person. I won't bother you, definitely, if you don't bother me. But I think I have a problem with, you know, laws on the books that says that someone can come and start an altercation, feel like they're losing, and then use a law to justify murdering me. That scares me, and I think it scares a lot of folks. And I think I've posted on a couple of websites that I really felt like this particular trial woke a sleeping giant in black people. I think they woke up and said, wait a minute, you know, we don't do something, they're going to be shooting us down in the street like it's the Wild Wild West. And I really do believe that, and I think for good reason. I think we really do need to be concerned. I think that's why the president is stepping in. I think that's why the DOJ is stepping in. A lot of people have a problem with that, y'all. You know, Mr. McBride, you know, Carl, they don't feel like the president and the DOJ should get involved. Do y'all agree with that they should get involved with this particular issue?
Well, even the law itself has shown that it's not a good law because of the crime rate. And it shots, you know, the number of people who have been already harmed upon this this law. And so that in itself, you know, the law is supposed to prevent more crime. And this law here is just increased, the crime in Florida.
Wasn't there a 70-something-year-old man that shot his neighbor recently, or I think he just was found convicted, in which he used Stand Your Ground as his defense, but he used it twofold. And, Mr. McBride, I want you to answer that. He used the fact that he felt like he was standing his ground, but then – on the second fold, it's kind of like he said, well, if that don't work, I'm mental too. And the situation was that he felt like the young boy next door had stole some weapons from him. So the young boy next door was African-American. The shooter was a 76-year-old Caucasian man. And what happened was when the teen was going outside to get the garbage from the curb, the old man came outside. And he confronted him and I guess, you know, said, I mean, there was no audio, there's just videotape of it, but it appears there was a, you know, verbal confrontation there and he's telling him something. And then the next thing you know, the mother on the porch sees the man has a gun, and she says something, and the man kind of turns the gun to her. But then he eventually goes back and turns the gun on the teen, and he shoots him. I mean, he never called the police, you know, never called the police and said, hey, somebody's stealing my tools. He just completely took the law into his own hands. So my problem is, how is it that he was able to use two defenses? How can he say that he stood his ground, and then when he was found guilty of that, now they're saying that he has a mental defense.
First of all, I don't think that was standing ground. It was just self-defense. But
was
but
it?
Where was the threat? So we'll go back to my 3W questions. I mean, what was the young man doing to threaten him, and why did he have to pull the trigger exactly when he did? And my guess is he couldn't answer either of those questions.
You claim the guy was self-defense, but it actually wasn't self-defense.
Yeah, so if he couldn't answer those questions, they say, oh, sorry, I must be insane. And, you know, then I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. But it doesn't sound to me like
that. There was video, so he couldn't say it was self-defense because the boy was feet away from him, and he never touched him. Is that right, Carl?
Then that's murder. That's not self-defense. That's
murder. I didn't see it, but if that's what happened, then, you know, if he didn't pose an immediate threat, I mean, up on him, you know, the guy would have to show that he was trying to swing an arm at him or made a certain body movement or something that showed that he was going to pose an immediate threat, you know, for him to, you know, shoot the gun off. But according to what you're saying, that didn't happen.
I'll share the video with you this evening. That wasn't the case. Okay, we're going to go to the phone lines. Area code 281-855. Good evening. You're on center stage. 281-855. Good evening. Okay. 28, last call.
I'm here.
281.
I'm here. I'm here. I'm here. I'm here. I'm
Hi.
Sorry. I
Hello.
Had
How
my
are
thing
you?
On mute. I'm good.
Okay.
How are you?
I'm good.
I just really quickly want to throw something in here that I just heard tonight, and I wonder how the conversation will change with this information. Apparently, the statistics in Florida show that more blacks have successfully used the defense of stand your ground and won than whites in the state of Florida.
Mm.
So with that in mind, does it change the view of whether or not stand your ground laws are worth being on the books or not? Because like I said last night, if you take this law away, you're not just taking it away from white people. You're taking it away from everyone. And is that something you want to do? And seriously, I didn't know that, but I just heard that the statistics do prove that more blacks in Florida have got off with that defense than whites.
And see, Mr. McBride, I asked you earlier, good law or bad law, and you said that was a bad question. I asked you, I said, you know, stand your ground, is that a good law or a bad law? And you said that was a bad question. Well, the statement she just made puts that back on the table.
Okay. Well, maybe I just think the real question is, do you have a right to exercise self-defense? And that really boils down to whether your life is being threatened and whether you can articulate the threat. To me, that's the real question. And stand your ground is almost a it comes up, but the true question to ask is the self defense and the threat question. That's kind of the way I was focused on it. So I didn't mean to. I probably, you know.
Okay.
I'm just trying to focus on what I think is the bigger question, and that is, when can you exercise the right to self defense?
And Carrie, he's right in that. The only thing stand your ground does is it removes the idea that you have a duty to actually try to flee a situation where your life might be in danger. That's
right.
All Stand Your Ground does. You still
okay.
have the self-defense. The thing of it is, and if you listen carefully to Eric Holder and maybe even the president, the only thing this Stand Your Ground law does, no matter what state it is in, removes the duty, the so-called duty, to try to run away from a dangerous situation.
Wow.
That's all it does. That's all it does.
That's a detached reflection thing about how it cannot be demanded in the presence of an uplifted knife. So you don't have to flee. You know, you don't have to retreat. But this law here needs to be, if they do keep it, they need to scrutinize case for case, because in the case of George Zimmerman, we had a racial profiling thing going on there. You know,
well,
so that case there, you know, you probably have to bring the race thing in, right? Particular case.
Wait.
Maybe not all the cases, but this particular case here, we have some racial profiling going on there.
No. There really wasn't racial profiling going on here. If you go back and you look at the actual transcript of the 911 tapes and you see what Zimmerman's reply to the 911 officer was when she asked for a description, and then she prodded him and asked black, white, or whatever, he said, "I think he looks black," but he didn't know for sure.
Well, he came back later and he said African American. He came back later.
No.
In that same shape, he comes back later. You got the file, Thelma.
But his his initial response was, "I think he looks black." So he wasn't profiling prior to even making that 911 call, because he didn't know if he was black or not.
But then, when the records reflect that George Zimmerman never called the police or the the 911 or the non-emergency number on anyone other than African Americans, the records reflect that.
But that doesn't mean that he profiled this young man. You're assuming something and you know, because we've said it before, assuming something can make an ass out of you and me. You can't assume.
I'm sure that
he
has seen some white walking down the same street in the neighborhood. If he's a community watchdog, I mean, I'm sure he's going to see some white guy walking down the street.
I don't think he could tell, to be honest with you. Number one, the guy did have a hoodie on. And number two, it was raining that night and it was dark. Seriously do not think he knew. And I said this last night on my show. My younger brother at that age had an awful temper, and if anybody would have questioned him, like it sounds like Zimmerman did with Trayvon, my brother would have had a temper at 17 years old to turn around and challenge the guy who was asking the question.
He didn't have a right to question him. The policy and procedure for the neighborhood watch was to be the eyes, in the neighborhood, and to contact police if they saw anything suspicious. So he never even had a right to confront him.
Because he's neighborhood watch, he doesn't have the right to ask some guy what he's doing in the neighborhood. That doesn't even make sense, Carrie.
Where about him calling the police?
He wasn't breaking into a car. He wasn't breaking into a house. Why would you stop him in the first place?
Because there had been a string of burglaries in the area, and apparently now what's coming out, more information, Trayvon was really close to the houses, which is why that Zimmerman apparently must have thought he was doing something wrong. And the assumption is Trayvon was close to the houses trying to get out of the rain. So there's a lot of things going on here. Race was not a part of it.
Anything for Zimmerman said. I mean, first of all, you have to stop. And if I prove that you told me a story and there were holes in your story, then I really began to question the whole story. So I think with Zimmerman, if he had been truthful and forthcoming from the beginning, And, you know, and there weren't so many inconsistencies. People might be, you know, willing to believe his whole story, but I really think once you prove that there's so many holes in his story and he changed his story so many times, I, you know, just on things as simple as whether or not he knew what Stand Your Ground was. You know, the fact that he told that lie on television speaks volumes to the man's credibility. That's just my opinion.
Wait a minute. Just because he sat in that class and that was taught doesn't mean that it sunk into his brain. I mean, we're making an awful lot of assumptions.
The man was doing ride-alongs with the police, and the professor came to court. Did you forget? The captain, whatever his name was, Mr. Goodlooking said, hey, he was good in the class. He got an A. So that pretty much tells me he understood the class. He understood the class.
And another thing, ma'am, just understand that if George Zimmerman's record only reflected he was calling the police on African Americans, and he was always, and he made a statement that they're always getting away, you know, it could show that he was only watching African Americans. I mean, guys in the community who look just as suspicious as an African American would. He never called the police on them, though.
But the truth is, what they say is the 9 calls previous were African Americans. We don't know prior
calls
to this. We don't know prior to that. We don't know. And the makeup of that community is a lot African American. I mean, it is.
I didn't hear that.
These are all statistics, huh?
I didn't hear that the makeup was a lot of
African
American. I didn't hear that.
Yeah,
I never heard that trial. We never heard that during the,
trial. It kind of gave me the impression that it was a very lily white kind of community with maybe a few brown people and maybe a black person sprinkled in there. That's it.
Right.
And when I say brown, I mean like maybe Asian.
Okay, so stop and think. Who's feeding the information that you're getting about any of that? It's all coming from mainstream media, correct?
You have the file, and I have the file. And, you know, if you go and listen to the witness testimony in the file, you'll see that those are Caucasian people.
Yeah, I'm not saying there's not Caucasians that live there. I'm just saying there is a large community of African American and all kinds of colors. It's not just a community of lily white people. The thing of it is, more information is now coming out statistically about all of this information than what came out before the trial or during the trial. And I think we all have to think for ourselves, which we're doing, and I don't think I'm ever going to change your mind, Carrie, but I'm not on anybody's side here. I just truly believe that Trayvon Martin was the average teenager and that he's a male, and male testosterone is high when they're in their teens, and I don't think he liked the questioning by Zimmerman. I don't think there was a racial aspect in this. I think
Let me add something to the argument then. Okay, again, there was no toxicology report done on George Zimmerman, but the EMT said that George Zimmerman told them that he was on temazepam and Adderall. Those are considered mind-altering drugs. They alter your mood swing. They cause agitation and aggression. So if you take that into and factor that in, and you look at the fact that he's carrying a gun and he has his wannabe cop mentality, that was a malt cocktail, and it was just poor Trayvon that just happened to be in the neighborhood the night that George Zimmerman decided to take the law into his own hands. That's my belief, that those drugs altered George Zimmerman's judgment that night, and it's a possibility, you know, when he's describing to the non-emergency operator, you know, what's going on, it really just sounds like he was just making that stuff up. You know, he's coming toward me. He's checking me out, you know. I mean, he's circling the car. Really? I mean, come on, y'all. Thelma, hold on. I'm going to go to area code 626-488. Good evening, you're on center stage. 626-488.
I'm going to try to open you. Can you hear me? Yeah,
I can hear you.
Okay, thank you. I'm trying to save you some trouble and that give you a bit of advice. You should never argue racism with the white supremacists. There is no, have you ever had a conversation with a white supremacist and changed their mind? I don't think that is possible. I'm going to say you don't have to discuss with these people about what it is like the previous caller, there's no way you can change these white supremacist mindset. So I'm going to say you're in a little bit of trouble and skip that. Okay, now let me go to the stand your ground law.
Okay.
Stand your ground law was put in place by these white supremacists in these white supremacist states primarily to allow for civilians to do what the police had done for 40, 50, 100 years. That is to shoot unarmed black people and get away with it. To say, oh, he had a gun. I thought he looked funny. He made a move. It was put in position by the white supremacists in order to allow for other white supremacists to start killing off black people. And you see it with Zimmerman. You see it with Spooner. You see it with other cases. And is not in, put in place, despite what this white supremacist had told you, is not in place to allow black folks to defend themselves. When black folks have tried to use a stand your ground law, white folks in a jury convicted them and throw them in jail. This law is not for black people to defend themselves. It's for civilian white folks to exterminate black people.
Apparently, he didn't just hear the statistics that I gave, apparently.
Well, give them to him.
That's not something I made up.
Give them to him again.
How about just give you a source?
Okay. Oh, give him the source. Give him the source.
Oh, it was on TV just a few minutes
okay,
ago.
Yeah. On TV
you,
a few minutes ago. That's the source.
Yeah.
Right there.
It wasn't Fox News,
I thought so. White supremacy.
Look, the guy, Mr. Parks, the attorney for Trayvon Martin's family, was sitting right there when he made the comment, okay? He was on the show. And when the comment was made, he didn't disagree.
Mm-hmm.
More blacks have gotten off with the stand your ground law than whites in Florida. Now, if you don't believe that, that's fine. Quit calling me a white supremacist because
I know you very well. We knew you for 500 years. We know white supremacists when we see
you. Oh, my God. You know,
fair.
You aren't even
That's
worth talking
fair.
To.
That's not fair.
Yeah. You're not even worth talking
That's
to.
That's not fair. I mean, she's not been around 500 years. So you're saying just...
We have 500 years.
You're saying
just
because she's a Caucasian, she's a white supremacist, or is there something else that you're pulling from that to draw that conclusion?
I'm listening to her comments.
Oh.
Carrie, do you mind if I – this is Kevin McBride. May I enter the conversation briefly?
Sure.
I'd like to ask the gentleman caller, 66 area code, I believe, is in my area of the country, Pasadena, California, or Glendale. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm a Covina. I'm Covina, man.
Covina, okay.
Yeah.
How – I mean, so you live – I live in, West Los Angeles. How – I mean, you obviously feel threatened in Covina, clearly from your comments. What's life like for you?
You said I feel threatened.
I'm interpreting that from your comments, and if is that what my question for you really is? What's life like there in terms of do you feel threatened in your community?
Me personally, I do not feel threatened in my community.
Okay.
We don't have stand your ground laws in California.
Oh, sure we do.
We don't have white supremacists running. Sacramento.
We do have stand your ground laws, and we do. So.
Okay, wait a minute. Be clear then, Mr. McBride. You said earlier you don't have them on the books, but you use that defense in court. Is that what you're meaning?
Yeah, and what I mean is there's a distinction between statutory law, which is on the books, and common law, which is unwritten, but it's still applied, is maybe the best way to say it.
Okay.
So
I know we have those laws
recognizes the right to stand your ground as long as your life is genuinely under threat and you're facing a threat to your life. Yeah.
Okay. Does that answer?
That's self-defense laws. I think I don't think that applies
correct.
To.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the self-defense laws are different. Stand your ground was made to for a civilian white folks to kill black folks.
I do believe that's a misconception because I believe self-defense law is really the key question. Stand your ground is a very often misunderstood component of it, and I totally agree with you that I think there are a lot of examples of people misunderstanding it and going beyond what the self-defense law allows. But self-defense law really is the key question in all these shooting cases.
Wow. Let me ask you a question here, Mr. McBride, and maybe you can answer this or maybe you can't. Because there's such a, you know, uprising about this and everybody's debating whether or not Stand Your Ground should be taken away or not, is there maybe a revision or an addendum that could make that a better law?
I don't think so, but I tell you what I would like to recommend. I don't think you can modify Stand Your Ground or self-defense laws because I think it depends on common sense. It has to be reasonable, and there's no way to legislate beyond that, in my opinion. But I would like to comment on what I think should be done, if I may.
Okay.
What I think should be done is I think if people are going to carry a gun, armed citizens, I think we ought to look at laws that say, fine, if you're going to carry a law and be neighborhood watch, you have to call in to the dispatcher. You have to clearly follow instructions from the dispatcher. And mm-hmm. if you're going to act like law enforcement, then you have to act like law enforcement all the way. And you call things in and you follow instructions. So in my opinion, that would be a very positive change to clarify that if you're going to be a neighborhood watch guy, you have to do it under the auspices of overall police authority, not just on your own.
Wow.
That would be my suggestion.
I think right there is where that you highlight what Stand Your Ground is relevant to what I was saying. Because you take Abdul Jamal, let's say, in New York, and he was shot how many times by cops when the man pulled out his wallet and tried to show his ID. Now, what Stand Your Ground would do is it would give the civilian the same authority to say, I thought this guy had a gun. He had pulled out his wallet, and I shot him. I stood my ground. Now, see, the cops can get away with that, but civilians in the self-defense, they could not get away with that. They couldn't say, like, well, I thought he had something. You would have to be legitimately under threat. Now, with Stand Your Ground law, you can just assume, oh, I thought he had a wallet. I shot him. I thought he stole my shotgun. I came outside and I shot him.
That's a misunderstanding of what I don't think the law allows that, and I don't think people would get away with that, in my opinion.
Basically, the way he described it, that's basically how the law has been applied. You know,
right? They just got away with it. How can you say? I don't think that we're talking about Zimmerman. He just got away with it. I thought the dude would did something, and he killed him.
But Stand Your Ground didn't even come into play in the Zimmerman case. That's.
But as we know, the instructions to the jury had Stand Your Ground in it.
Yeah, they got confused, they say they got confused. Let's go back to the phone lines. We're going to go to area code 314-381. Good evening. You're on center stage.
How you doing today?
Good evening.
You know, blacks do benefit from Stand Your Ground law in Florida at a higher, should we say, a disproportionate rate to the percentage of the population.
Hmm. Did you find statistics on that?
Pardon me?
You found statistics on that?
Oh, yeah, there's statistics on it. Just do a Google on it. There's several newspaper articles that comment on it. And blacks do get away, do use the law, and, they have killed whites and use the law to, you know, the way it was meant to be. One case where this black woman back in September where she had an automobile accident, a minor fender bender, pulled up on the service station. The white gentleman that was in his vehicle ran over to her and started beating on her door and took his fist and bust out her driver's window, and she shot him and killed him. And, nothing happened to her. So I myself personally, I'm for Second Amendment rights. Oh. I'm for concealed carry, open carry, and also, self-defense.
But the white guy
are
immediate threat and danger to her health and her security. He showed an imminent threat to her when he bust that window out. She didn't know what he was going to do after that. I mean, hey, so she had a right to stand the ground. But for the most part, when you got a black on black, then stand the ground going to be all right. I guess the whites don't care about blacks killing blacks, but most times a black kill a white, the blacks better be able to justify it. Like she was able to justify that because he posed an imminent threat. But now, what the other guy was saying, the other brother was saying, that whites don't have to really show that a black posed an imminent threat. to shoot them. They just say, hey, he just made the wrong move. Oh, I thought he had something.
Well, blacks wouldn't have to show an image, wouldn't have to show neither if the white person they shot is dead.
Well, huh? He hit that window. When he bust that window out, he posed an imminent threat to health, safety, and health. I mean, you know,
well, let me ask y'all something. This is how I feel about whether or not Stand Your Ground should have an addendum or a revision. I think, based on what Charlie Condon said, the ex-attorney general in South Carolina, he said that there didn't need to be an investigation, a charge, or anything. And somebody says that's their defense, let it go. I think under that law, there should be a revision or a clause that says anytime someone dies as a result of you shooting them, stabbing them, or whatever the means was, that you took their life, there should be an absolute full investigation. It should be labeled a homicide, first of all, and then fully investigated. Not just your word, but fully investigated, you know, to make certain that everything you said about what happened checks out. Does that make sense? Because I don't think that's happening in all these cases.
Well, each state has its right to write its own laws, but I wouldn't have any. You know, the same way as you had an automobile accident and it was a vehicular homicide. Well, the driver of the person that hit the other car where somebody died, their license is checked. They take a breath analyzer,
right,
and so on. So I don't think that would be too far fetched. No.
I think the problem with this whole law is that it just seems to me that, you know, dead folks don't tell tales. And so it just seems like the law gives too much credibility to the person who's telling the story. And as we saw in George Zimmerman's case, there was a whole bunch of holes in his story once people start poking at it. And so I just think that every story needs to be, I mean, every murder or shooting or stabbing or whatever is the result of somebody's life being taken, that be fully investigated as a homicide,
well,
proven otherwise.
You have a good point, because that was the whole outcry in Sanford. Anyway, blacks had said that there had been cases where people have been victims of crime, in many cases murder, and the police department would never do a thorough job on it. That was the whole outcry in the beginning. That began everything. And, you know, they was indicting the police department. Martin's parents weren't notified until 3 days after he was killed. One detective wanted to arrest Zimmerman,
I'm getting the facts wrong. Somebody may have to correct me on this. I thought the day after Trayvon Martin was killed, his father filed a missing persons report and was brought to the police station. And at that time, they told them of the John Doe that they had in the morgue. I thought that was the case.
Well, I heard 3 days.
What did you hear, Zelma? Or Thelma? Was it 1 day or 3 days?
I'm here.
Yeah, one day. How many days did it take them to identify Trayvon Martin's body?
I don't remember, Carrie, to be honest with you.
For some reason, I just recall that the day after was they immediately let him hear the tape, they brought him to the police station and he identified the picture. He identified his son by a picture, and I think Trayvon Martin stayed in the morgue for like 5 days, I believe, because they did an autopsy. But I thought that his identity was immediately known, like within 24 hours of the murder, because his father filed a missing persons report. I might be wrong on that, but okay. I think
you're right, but, you know, well, we can double check. But
yeah, I think that's the case. Okay, you know, Carl and Mr. McBride, we're closing out tonight. What are your closing statements on Stand Your Ground? I mean, for all these people that's marching in the streets and wanting to see some change about this law, Mr. McBride, what would you say to them?
I would say focus on the right question. And the right question is a person's life genuinely threatened or not? And really think it through as a self-defense case. Don't get carried away with a sideshow, which I think Sandy Ground is. I would also agree with your suggestion, Carrie, about making sure that there's a thorough investigation. I think it's a great idea.
Really?
And I believe beyond that, just focus on, you know, articulating, is there a threat? And if so, who's being threatened? And what's the nature of the threat? And why do you have to pull the trigger right now, if at all? And that's really what self-defense is, and that's what you should learn and keep in your head. So that's what I would say.
Carl, Mitchell, closing remarks.
Well, I agree with you, Carrie, about the thorough investigation part, but I also think that the law needs to be overturned because I think the blacks are going to be subject to much more scrutiny when they commit just standing ground against a white versus when a white commits a crime against a black, their explanation can be more lampooned. And so I think in the long term, we're going to lose under this law. And so especially being applied in southern states, there's never been anything good for African Americans in the southern state. They don't mean us no good. They never have. And so I think by being in their hands, we need to get rid of it.
Wow. Okay, y'all. Well, that's going to have to be the closing remarks. Listen, Mr. McBride, he's with
yes,
the
ma'am.
Law office. I mean, he's with the McBride Law Office, PC out there in L.A., I believe it is, Mr. McBride. Can you tell them
yes.
how to reach you if they'd like to get some self-defense advice? Or
sure, on the Internet at McBride-law.com.
Okay.
And I have a blog site called lawfuluse.com where I follow cases like this and comment on them.
Wonderful.
Or you can
Carl
call me
Mitchell. Carl Mitchell is a civil rights activist out there in Paris, Texas. Carl, do you want to give out any information about how they can contact you?
Oh, yes, they can contact me right here at 903-401-5040. So,
okay, y'all, this is what we do each and every Friday night right here on Center Stage. So come back next Friday. This is what we're doing, busting cases, talking about laws and things like that, politics, religion, you name it. We talk about it here on Center Stage. So come back and join us next Friday night. And also tell a friend, family member, or coworker to check out the show as well. Also a reminder, y'all, that the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or advertisers. Again, I'd like to say thank you to Mr. Carl Mitchell and Attorney Kevin McBride. Y'all, tonight, because I really feel like this whole thing, this whole case, you know, has opened up the debate for, like, people just shooting people down in the street. I mean, really, that's just how I feel, kind of like the Wild Wild West. And so tonight, I'm going to close out tonight's show with Will Smith. So it's a throwback song, y'all, when Will Smith did the song Wild Wild West. That's what we're going to close out with tonight, y'all, because that's just really how I feel. When I got through listening to them talk about Stand Your Ground and everybody talking about getting guns, I felt like it was a Wild Wild West. And so that's what we're going to close out with tonight, y'all. Will Smith, Kumo D, singing the Wild Wild West. Give me a second to load it, and we're going to go. But I thank you all so much for joining me tonight. I've had a thank you. I had a wonderful job talking to these two men tonight. Very smart folks, y'all. And I learned so much in the discussion tonight. And I hope everybody else walks away with at least the knowledge of what Stand Your Ground really means, when you should and should not apply it, when it's time to just retreat, if at all possible, and save yourself some trouble. Okay, y'all, here we go. Wild Wild West, Will Smith.